Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars, because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
Today's specials are brought to you by Fancy Feast. From impeccable pâtés to silky broths to chef-inspired creations, a memorable mealtime experience is always on the menu for your CAD. Learn more at fancyfeast.com.
The Decibel Geek Podcast would like to thank Tales from the Stage author Michael Toney for his help in arranging this week's interview. Featuring 15 in-depth interviews with some of the most influential names in the hard rock and heavy metal genre, more information can be found at talesfromthestage.com. That's talesfromthestage.com.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that all-important time. Once again, you know it, time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. I'm Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my main man right here in the Decibel Geek Studios with me, Chris Sinzak. How's it going, brother?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. We are going to have some fun tonight.
We're taking the Wayback Machine and also some awesome current stuff for the guest of today.
Yeah, very cool. We're going to be talking to Jeff Duncan. If you don't know, you think way back to a band called Odin. You may not know them unless you are familiar with the Decline of Western Civilization Part 2.
The Metal Years.
That's right. Then you definitely know who Odin is. If not, well, how about Armored Saint? Yeah, we love us some Armored Saint around here. I know I do. I love Armored Saint.
Some great rock and metal.
And we're going to turn you on to a band called DC4 today, which if you haven't heard of them, by the end of today's episode, you're going to be real glad you did.
Yeah, we are, because they were a real diamond in the rough, because even we weren't clued in until we started researching for this.
I had no idea that there was this amazing band out there called DC4, and had we not taken the time to sit down and talk to Jeff Duncan, who knows? We could have lived our entire lives and never hearing this band, and how shitty would that have been?
We'd be hearing a lot more from them and later on in the show.
Yeah.
And in the future.
Oh, yeah.
I can see them on some radio shows.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So we got to get to Geek of the Week for the week. And Aaron, who's our Geek of the Week this week?
Who is our Geek of the Week? Oh, it's the man going to catch me a ride home tonight after the show, Rick Shaw.
Don't be racist.
I ain't saying he's Asian or anything. I'm just saying he's
Rick Shaw actually looks dead in his profile picture.
His name is Rick Shaw.
And he's got a profile picture of a rotting corpse. But
I can't guarantee he's a taxi cab driver.
On the Canadian, on the Hoser Hijack episode we had with Wally and Rich,
I just gotta
while
say,
back.
Those guys, I gotta agree with Rick Shaw. They did an awesome job.
They did, and he said
a lot of fun.
He said, "Thanks to you two, I can't stop listening to 40 Sons, One Way Ticket, great tune." So Wally and Rich, a couple weeks back, good job on picking up some
new
stuff there.
They killed it, man. And you know, I told Wally myself, you know what it's all about is being fun, being entertaining, informative, and turning people on to new music they never heard before. And
they covered the
bases.
They
hit it with me, man. I heard all kinds of cool stuff I never heard before that day.
Great job on that. And
excellent.
Yeah, be hearing more from them in the future. Today's show, Jeff Duncan, Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, Armored Saint, DC4.
Yeah, there ain't nothing more to do but to do it. So let's do it. Decibel Geek Podcast, Jeff Duncan, right now. Back back to me, I think the first thing I think about when I think of Jeff Duncan is, man, you come from a rock and roll family, don't you?
Yeah, I sure do.
I mean, you got to think the Duncan boys, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, myself and my brothers, along with Rowan Robertson, who people might know from Dio.
Yeah.
We have a band ourselves, DC4. They've got three records out. And my dad was actually a musician, too. He had a gold single in the early 60s. And yeah, the whole family's musical. It goes way back.
Right on.
And started playing guitar at the age of 10, we read in the research. Is Wiki correct on that?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Because you can't always trust it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 10 years old, I got the bug.
Right on. So you come from a musical family between you and your brothers. You know, you say your dad was involved in music, and you picked up the guitar at 10 years old. When you were 10 years old, I mean, you know, you're a rock and roller through and through. What kind of stuff were you turned on to at that age that made you want to pick up and start rocking the guitar?
Well, I mean, it kind of started with my brothers and I. Our parents had given us these boxes of records because we got a record player, and that was pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And it was a bunch of 50s music. So that was really kind of where it started, was listening to 50s music and getting into that, which was a nice introduction because that music's very melodic and fun to sing. And,
right.
And the chord progressions were easy, you know, and that sort of thing. But it kind of started there. And then, you know, our dad, he was really into, he's really into Elvis and you know, a lot of stuff. Chicago, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Cat Stevens. All kinds of stuff. And so, you know, there were times where he would sit us in front of the stereo and say, here, listen to this album. We would sit there and listen to records. And so it was a real vast kind of, a lot of music. I think the hard rock and metal was just kind of something that I myself took to, you know, the second I heard it. I'm like, this is where I want to go. You know, and that was definitely Black Sabbath.
Right on.
That introduced me to that.
And what was Dad's reaction to hearing Black Sabbath?
He was pretty open-minded, so he just, you know, he thought it was interesting, but he just was really supportive. You know, he was really into, you know, you want to do music. But then, you know, if I decided I wanted to become whatever else, he would have been the same way about it. But I think he was especially pleased that we all wanted to be musicians.
Oh, okay.
Well, right on.
That's unusual to find in a parent, you know, and especially one that in the industry. A lot of times they'll be like, oh, don't go into that. I know what it's like, you know.
Yeah, well, he was a rock and roller, you know, in his day. You know, he was into all the, you know, Elvis and all that stuff. So he was a rock and roller at heart. So he understood what it was all about. It wasn't like he was alien to it. He had done it in his youth.
Right, right. And when you was Odin the first band you put together?
Yeah, pretty much. It kind of evolved from a band that I joined when I was in seventh grade. And it just kind of evolved out of that and became Odin, which is a long story. But it's, yeah, that was definitely my first rock band. The first thing I did that made records and played clubs. And when I first got into the mix or the mess, depending on how you look at it.
And what was, around what year are we talking about when Odin starts playing out in the clubs in Los Angeles?
That was probably about 1983, I'm going to say. And the first real club gig we did, actually, or ironically, was opening up for Armored Saint at the Troubadour.
Really?
Nice. That's ironic, man. Talk about rock and roll irony, huh?
Yeah, that's when we met them. We became friends with them. So when I joined Armored Saint, it was great because I was already really good friends with the band.
Well, that's
it,
cool.
It almost seems to me, you know, in retrospect, that you're almost more of a better fit with a band like Armored Saint as opposed to Odin. Because it seemed to me like Odin had that, like, hard rock, almost Manowar look. But you guys had a different sound that was definitely tied in with what was going on in L.A. at the time. You know, you had your brother with you in Odin, right? Your brother Sean on drums.
Mm-hmm.
What was Matt doing at that time? I mean, I'm just curious, what's how's the age lineup? Is Matt, like, too young to be in Odin at this time or what?
No, I mean, he's really not that much younger than me, but he picked up the bass a little later on, but he did have his own band that was playing in L.A. at the time, a band called Castle. So he was rocking and rolling, but by the time when we had started the band, he wasn't really attacking the bass at that point in time.
Yeah.
Like we were. Well, he was. He was doing his practicing in his room period at that point in time when that band came to be. So, but then, you know, one day we turned around and he was just like really awesome. So when, you know, down the road, when I decided to put together DC4, he was the obvious choice.
Right on.
So it was, there was no denying that, like, who was going to be the bass player.
That's cool. So it starts out, we'll go back to Odin. You know, it's Randy O on vocals, yourself, Jeff Duncan on lead guitar, Sean Duncan, your brother, on drums, and Aaron Sampson on bass. You guys are, you know, when people talk about Odin, you know, when you look back in retrospect today, you know, Odin's kind of an obscure thing. You know, they're not like Motley Crue where it's, you can easily find out about Motley Crue, you can easily find out about Guns N' Roses. It's a little bit harder to dig up information on Odin. You know, you guys just... We're one of those bands, I think your contemporaries always said, you know, out of the bands in L.A. that didn't get signed, that didn't make it, your name's always at the top of that list.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's a classic rock and roll story. You know, you just never know what's going to happen. And, you know, with Odin, you know, there was definitely a period of time we were one of the biggest, if not the biggest band in Hollywood.
Right.
And we had a very huge following. But, you know, for reasons, you know, I'll never know, you know, we had some management issues and that sort of thing, but it just never really happened for us. And, you know, there's some other bands that were like that too, that I thought were great. You know, a band like Leavenworth, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a huge following, same kind of thing. And for some reason, it just didn't cross that it didn't go to that next level.
Right.
And, you know, Odin slugged it out for, you know, 7 or 8 years. And, you know, after enough time, you just kind of get sick of doing the same thing over and over. So when Armored Saint approached me, I thought it over, of course, but it was definitely the best thing for me to do at the time.
Yeah. Well, with the, you know, and you mentioned that Odin kind of started hitting clubs around 83, and I think a lot of people lose sight because, you know, of course, everyone goes back and looks at things retrospectively now with YouTube and everything, and you can go on and you can watch the old clips from the Decline movie. And I think back, you know, if you look back at that clip, you're thinking, oh, these guys were around for, you know, 6 months. Bill Gazzari, you know, vouched for them, and it looked like they were going to make it, and then all of a sudden, nothing. But then, it's like you said, you started hitting clubs at 83, so there was a lot of dues being paid leading up to, you know, you guys getting involved in that movie. So did Gazzari pretty much champion you guys right off, or did you have to struggle quite a bit before you got that push from him?
Well, we didn't really start playing at Gazzari's till later on in the band's career. Mm-hmm. It was later on that we started playing Gazzari's. Before that, we were playing places like the Country Club in Reseda. We did the Troubadour quite a bit and places like that. So Gazzari's came later on, like probably around 88 was when we started playing there.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill was great. I mean, you know, we got paid real well, but we were doing, you know, we'd do Thursday, Friday, Saturday and sell it out. And, you know, 3 nights, and he was real fair with paying us and really liked the band, and he was great. You know, he was just, he was real supportive and a cool guy. He was cool to me. I know that much. And, but yeah, Gazzari's didn't really happen until later on.
I got to imagine at that time, you know, it's got to be a pretty good thing that Bill Gazzari's got your back, you know. And if people don't know, the godfather of rock and roll in Hollywood, you know, ran the club, brought in all these great bands. I think it started like back in the 60s with the Doors, and everybody that's pretty much rocked any time in the history of L.A. has played at this place. But at that time in L.A., there's a lot of what they call pay-to-play going on at the clubs. Were you ever privy to any of this? I mean, you say, you know, Bill has got you and pays you well, but there's got to have been a lot of bands that paid to play with you guys. You ever see any of that?
Well, no, because it didn't exist then. That didn't exist then. I mean, bands would play, and they would get paid based on their draw, and they'd work out a door deal with them.
Right.
Nobody was paying to play. Like a band like Odin, for example, we would say, okay, we want this much guarantee, and then we get this percentage of the door if it gets beyond this many people.
Right.
So we had, you know, we had the leverage to kind of say this is what we want. But other bands that were up and coming, which we were in that position too, you know, for a few years, you know, which was, you know, you get a percentage of what you bring in. And that's what's fair. You know, the pay-to-play thing is completely unfair.
Yeah.
And I'm real glad that, you know, when I was up and coming, I didn't have to deal with that.
Right. It's become a feast or famine thing with the way the club owners treat the groups now with it.
Right.
But, you know, and all right, so let's go in a little bit into the whole movie thing. When the movie starts doing production around L.A., how do you guys get involved? Did Penelope come to you, or how did that work out?
Yeah, we just got a call about it, and if we wanted to be in it, and you know, there was a flat rate we were offered to do it, and we just said, hey, why not? And we didn't really think anything of it. We just thought, okay, this will be interesting, you know. So we did it, and the movie came out, and it was funny because it was a little, you know, kind of, I think it was kind of embarrassing at first, but then later on, it just became like this cult thing, and I had people approaching me about it, and I was like, well, you know, we just got filmed being and doing what everybody else was being and doing, you know, at the time.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm real glad that, you know, I'm real grateful that we were in it, and it, you know, it definitely gave Odin some recognition that maybe we otherwise wouldn't have had, at least on a national level.
Sure. Well, I got to imagine back then you're filming that hot tub scene with all the girls, you probably weren't thinking, I'm going to be asked about this in 25 years.
No, and it still happens, you know. I mean, we're talking about it right now.
Exactly.
Know?
Exactly. One thing I've noticed from that film is that there's, like, the scenes. You know, you got the Paul Stanley scene where he's laying in the bed with the women, and you got the Ozzy scene where he's cooking himself breakfast, and, of course, Chris Holmes in the pool, you know.
Yeah.
No one can ever forget that. Were you guys, like, when they came to you about it, did you pick your scene? Did you say, we want to be in the hot tub drinking beers with a bunch of hot-looking girls around us?
No, we're just kind of, you know, that hot tub was actually at Penelope's house.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, she said, yeah, you're going to come up to my house, you know, just hang out in the hot tub and, you know, bring whoever you want. So we invited a bunch of girls, and she, Penelope loaded us up with beer, which I think was intentional.
Right.
And, you know, you sit in the hot tub and drink beer, you get like twice the effect after a while.
That's true.
That's what happens.
That's true.
And, so we were pretty drunk when they filmed that. And we just went along with it. We were like, okay, fine.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Penelope getting you guys drunk, because I interviewed Nader and Brian from London a few months ago when those guys were here in Nashville, and they mentioned that they got loaded up pretty good on their scenes also. And actually Ricky Rackman also mentioned in his interview that he got loaded. So I think we know what the common denominator was on getting ready to shoot these scenes.
Yeah, well, that was the, you know, everybody was. I mean, at that time, it was all about that. It was all about a few things. And, you know, like I said, everybody was up to the same thing, you know, and definitely did it to the hilt. I mean, put it this way, 1989, I stopped everything. I haven't touched a drop thing since 1989.
Wow.
So I'm like, I got my fill of all that.
Boy, I guess.
You know, in my 20s. So, you know, or not even my 20s, you know, I mean, Odin was a sellout act, but at 17, we were selling out.
Yeah.
You know, between 17 and 23, it was just a party. You know, we did a couple Odin reunions, you know, over the past 10 years, there's been like two or three gigs we've done that have been great and a lot of fun. And we never know if it's going to be the last one or what's up, you know, but that didn't happen until way later. Odin didn't reunite for anything till 2003.
Right.
So it was a long time before we were ready to do that, you know, because we put it to bed. And I certainly did not want to do it. I think I was the one who was holding out the longest because I didn't want to do it.
Hmm.
But then I was listening to some records one day, and I was like, you know, that might be a good time. And so I called everyone, and we got together, and it was great.
Yeah, well,
that's very cool.
And now, Deep Thoughts with Lemmy Kilmister.
The thing is, they say it's an action figure. And I said to him, you're going to put a d*** on it? And he said, no. I said, it's not going to get much action in it.
Listen to the Decibel Geek podcast on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, and webOS phones with Stitcher. Stitcher's smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Hi, I'm the Red House on the Corner,
right where your baby used to stay. And you're listening to the Decibel Geek Podcast.
And it was in 88. Was it 88 that you joined Armored Saint?
Yeah. I joined Armored Saint in 1988. Initially, I was in the band with Dave Pritchard on guitar.
Now, was...
Hold on a second. You guys are jumping ahead of me here.
Okay.
You brought up Lost Boys. I wanted to ask a question about Lost Boys, and this is something I've really been wondering about. How is it, you know, and I don't know, you know, if there's a definitive answer to this, or maybe it's just an opinion thing. How is it that you guys from 83 to 88 are in Odin, and you just can't get that big record contract? You know, and then Randy O leaves Odin, forms Lost Boys, you're on board, and all of a sudden, boom, you guys have a contract. I mean, how does that work? Well, was it all Vicki Hamilton?
That's the music biz, man. And yes, I mean, Vicki Hamilton had a lot to do with that. You know, she was, and it's no slight to her in any way. I saw Vicki maybe 5 months ago or something like that, and we said hi, and it was great. But Vicki had approached Randy, and she really believed he was the star of the band. It was a classic story, you know?
Right, because everybody sees Randy O as the sex symbol of the 80s that should have been.
Right, and so she wanted him to leave the band and put together his own thing, and then she didn't want to shop Odin, she wanted to shop Randy. So he succumbed to that, and, you know, really how it worked is, you know, then it got kind of tense in the band. And Armored Saint had been knocking on my door since Delirious Nomad.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the truth.
Nice.
But I was holding out because I was still into my band. And so Armored Saint came knocking again at that time, and I told them yes. And so Odin did its last gig knowing it was over. In fact, I was rehearsing with Armored Saint and Odin at the same time, and I did my last gig with Odin at Gazzari's, and then the following week did my first gig with Armored Saint out in Reseda at the Country Club. So it was all very quick, that whole transition, one band ending and me beginning in another one happened really quick. So I was in the band initially with Dave Pritchard, and so it's all real close. But then I was, do you want me to continue with this?
Yeah, keep going, man. Yeah, man. You're on a roll.
So I was in the band with Dave Pritchard, and I ended up doing a tour with them. We did a tour with King Diamond, and it was great. And we got back from that tour and started writing and doing demos for what would come to be Symbol of Salvation. And then I was, at that time, I had some personal things I wanted to deal with, and I had a lot going on, and so I departed the band briefly. And in that time, I was out of Armored Saint. I did the Lost Boys album.
Okay.
And Dave Pritchard passed away. And then I got approached by, you know, sometime later, I got approached by John Bush and Joey and Gonzo about coming back to Armored Saint with Phil and doing another album, you know, which... And we already had, there was all that material written. I mean, songs like Rain of Fire you know, Dropping Like Flies and Tainted Past, you know, well, not Tainted Past, but there was Tribal Dance. A lot of that stuff was Dave's stuff Dave wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really the only person on the planet who knew how to play that stuff correctly because Dave had shown it to me because I was on the demos. And Phil was the only, you know, Armored Saint's a very family kind of thing. So they weren't going to just let some guitar players back in the band. It had to be that way for it to continue. And which I was so happy to do, you know, and making that particular album was very spirited because there was a cause behind it. There was, you know, it was about Dave's legacy and it was about the band forging on because it almost ended. It was almost over.
I can imagine so.
Yeah, there's quite a history there with Armored Saint, and then obviously with...
That's a killer album, by the way, Symbol of Salvation.
Oh, yeah,
amazing
yeah.
stuff.
And also the Revelation album that came out in 2000 is awesome, too. And, you know, describe what it was like going back and forth with John Bush being in and out of Anthrax. I mean, how difficult was that for the rest of you guys to deal with?
Well, when John joined Anthrax, there was no question that the band couldn't go on. I mean... you can't have Armored Saint without John Bush. It's
right.
impossible, you know. But at the time, I mean, I certainly didn't blame him. I mean, Armored Saint was, we had done touring for Symbol of Salvation in the States. It was very rough because, you know, at that time, 1991, you know, Nirvana was starting to hit and that whole thing and Seattle stuff. And, mm-hmm. and Armored Saint just wasn't doing what was popular. I mean, period. So touring was really rough. And, you know, Anthrax had kind of already made it, so to speak, you know, to that next level.
Yeah, they were established.
And they were hitting him up. I mean, he initially turned them down.
Oh, really?
And they were, he had initially said no. And, but they, you know, they kept at him. And so he finally did it. And I didn't blame him at the time. In fact, well, John was in Anthrax for a time. We were roommates. I mean, you know, I understood.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
You know, if any of us had had an offer like that at the time, we would have taken it.
Well, yeah. Sure. You know, way. You got to.
Yeah. And then, you know, then Sound of White Noise comes out. And then I got to say, because I was an Anthrax fan, you know, with Belladonna. It was one of the few instances where a band could make a sharp left turn as far as a vocalist goes, and it still sounds great. And because he fit them well, but at the same time, the stuff you guys were doing on Symbol of Salvation is, you know, him being an Anthrax led me to get into Armored Saint because...
Right. I'm sure that was
a lot of people probably.
A lot of that way.
And, you know, so I was like, wow, you know, he was doing some really awesome stuff here. And then, you know, it's awesome to know that he was able to go back to that. But, so you guys had a pretty strong friendship even when he was out of the band?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, I knew those guys, you know, John and Albert Saint. I knew those guys before I was in the band. So I was certainly going to be friends with them no matter what. I mean, I think that's the most important thing is that we're friends. We have a relationship. And the band is kind of, you know, really secondary to that mm-hmm. as far as, you know, because Armored Saint will come to an end one day and we'll get old and, you know, I'll be old man friends with those guys, you know, that'll never change. So, but I, you know, I was supportive of John, you know, I wanted him to do well. I wanted him to, you know, I always thought he was, you know, a great singer, one of the best. And I wanted him to get noticed. And at the time, that's what it was going to take, you know, for him to do what he wanted to do. So, was I sad Armored Saint had to end? Yeah. You know, I went through a real confusing period after that, but, you know, it was about him doing well. And as a friend and a brother, that's how I had to look at it. And that's how I did look at it.
Right. You got to wish him well and, you know, do the best you can to support him. You know, at this point, man, you know, DC4 is coming up. You're kind of a band hopper. You know, you've got bands going on at the same time, you know, taking turns in between. You're all over the place. How does DC4 come into play then?
Well, DC4 came to be probably around 1994, really. It had a different name. And it was just something that I had to do or I wanted to do. I had always written songs, and I just started singing on the demos. And, you know, got to get to my brothers, and we got another guitar player. We had a different guitar player at the time. And they just said, well, you know, you're going to sing, right? And I wouldn't really plan on that. But so I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. So we made our first record, I think, in 98. We made an EP, and then 1999, so we made our first album. But we've made three albums now, mm-hmm. an EP.
Right.
But it was just something that, you know, I wanted to do because I had the material and you know, a musician. And Armored Saint, you know, at the time didn't exist, so I needed to do something. And I put together a band with Sean right after Armored Saint broke up called Bird of Prey. That was it was a 4-piece band. It was more on the real super metal, and it was a cool band, but it just wasn't clicking right. We did it for about a year, and you know the singer wasn't right, and it just didn't have vibes. So
it was your rebound band, man.
What's that?
That was your rebound band.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it was something that was that I got into that wasn't going to last. It was just there so I could feel busy. You know. And but it wasn't strong, and it wasn't so this is the only band I've ever been in that didn't do a record. But that really was kind of where DC4, the idea of doing this other thing. So I was writing the kind of music that DC4 does, and so we just decided to expand that and forge ahead with doing our own thing. And we wanted to bring Matt in, and He was actually in Bird of Prey toward the end, but he hated it. So, you know, but to answer your question, the band came to be as a result of, you know, just having material and wanting to record it and wanting to do it.
Yeah, we were listening to, as we were getting the mics and everything set up, we were listening to Triple X off the Electric Ministry album. And
killer.
It's just great stuff, man. And I got to say, I don't know if it's a sibling thing or what, but, I mean, there's definite chemistry having, you know, two of your brothers in the same band with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's blood, you know. And and really, the band kind of went to a next level when we got Rowan in the band. The other guitar player we had before, he was a really good player. But when Rowan came in, it was definitely he was a cog in the machine, where I think the other guy we had was just a good player.
Right.
So the energy level and the cohesiveness and the synergy went up quite a bit. So, and it's interesting, you remove or add a member in a band, and it can change the band one way or the other. You just never know till you do it, you know. So fortunately for us, it definitely kicked it into high gear.
You know, and for people that don't know, you know, and I can be honest with you, and a testament to this, I'm a big fan of Armored Saint. I can appreciate what Odin has done, but I had never really listened to DC4 before, you know, we started talking about that we were going to talk to you, Jeff Duncan. And I can tell you, man, DC4 is fucking awesome, man. Really good. You know, and if anybody out there is a fan of hard rock and heavy metal, do yourselves a favor and check out this band.
Yeah.
Very good stuff.
Yeah, we just actually got our... We just reconfigured our website, so if anybody's interested in DC4, DC4Rocks.com is everything available there. Merchandise, all of our albums, everything. So DC4Rocks.com if anybody's curious.
Oh,
yeah, and
cool.
If you don't know, go check it out, and you'll want to know for sure.
Want to be a member of the Decibel Geek Army?
You slimy scumbag, get on your face and give me 25.
Join us on our fan page at facebook.com/DecibelGeek. Got a question, comment, request, or legal threat? Call us on our voicemail hotline at 540-DB-GEEK-1. That's 540-324-3351.
So what's on the horizon for you? More gigs with Armored Saint?
That's the funny thing I was thinking too, Chris. You know, normally you get towards the end of the interview and you say to your subject, you know, so what's up with the band now? But to say that to Jeff Duncan, he'd say, which one? Pick one of the three.
Oh, exactly. What?
So, Jeff, what's going on with all three of your bands, man?
well, Odin, you know, is kind of always, you know, a big question mark. So that's not active at all
right now.
We're beginning writing for a new DC4 album, which we'll start working on that probably come the beginning of the year. And then after that, we'll see. And you know, I'll probably just be getting settled into into Vegas, you know, where I just moved, and getting active here and just enjoying some new surroundings and kind of a fresh perspective on things. You know, that's why I got out of LA. I just wanted a new fresh perspective. And they're going to start writing again, it's only going to contribute to that. It's just a lot quieter here.
Yeah. Everybody seems to be going out to Vegas, because I've heard Jakey Lee's out there, Vince Neil is out there.
Or Nashville. One of the two.
Brent Muscat has got the Sin City Sinners out there. Do you ever get together with any of those guys?
Oh, yeah. I've sat in and jammed with Sin City Sinners a couple of times. And I actually, 2 nights ago, saw Jake. Talked to him a little bit, which was great.
Right on.
He's putting a new thing together, right?
Yeah, he's got something recorded, and I think he's looking for a singer right now to, you know, do shows with. Because his album, he did it with a bunch of different singers.
Uh-huh.
But you know, sitting and talking to him was just great. I mean, he's one of my heroes.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
Dickie Lee, badass. You know?
Hell yeah.
Just awesome. So it was great to meet him, and was at a party the other night, or yesterday. For a magazine out here, and I, you know, was hanging out with Ron Keel, who I've known for years, and saw Oz Fox from Striper and talked to him. So there's a lot of people out here, a lot of rock and rollers. So it's just a great place to be. You know, LA, I mean, really the music scene's kind of dead, mm-hmm. and it's certainly not what it used to be. But more importantly for me personally, I just needed to make a change. I just wanted to get out of there. And, you know, 46 years of living in the same place. You know? I want something else. And having toured and seen all the different places that exist, I thought it would be nice just to check one of them out. And all my buddies, you know, a lot of my buddies were out here in Vegas. So I was like, well, I'll go there.
Well, can I ask you? Can I ask you a couple of goofy questions before we let you go? Not that the other ones we haven't asked were goofy either, but all right. I was reading on your bio that you've done over 1,000 live shows. Now, tell me, and you don't have to. And of course, I know you're gonna say everywhere we play is our favorite place to play. What's been one of your favorite places to play, and what's been like just the absolute worst live gig you ever had?
Well, I remember Armor Saint did a show, and it was when we did Revelation, mm-hmm. and it was kind of like, you know, Armored Saint's back, and Armored Saint has always received a lot of love from Germany, and we did the Bakken Open Air Festival.
Sure.
And it was just, the energy was just amazing, a ton of people, and we were the first band of the day that went on that had lights, and it was just the time of day was perfect, the gig went without a hitch, there was no problems. The band sounded great. The crowd was amazing. And that was definitely one of the best shows I ever played in my life.
Awesome.
Just because there was so much love from the crowd, and everything was perfect. It was all just right. Just a real magical kind of night. And I'll never forget that gig. You know, we did some dates, in the early 90s, we did a European tour with Scorpions, and that was pretty cool because it was all sold out arenas. So that was great. But that one show we did in 2000 was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But worst gigs, I mean, you know, which one? it's kind of like that, and definitely depends on your perspective on things. But, as far as a bad gig, I remember having one, you know, in Florida one time that was just, everything went just completely wrong, and there weren't really that many people there. It was during the Cymbal tour, mm-hmm. and everybody was tired and burnt and grumpy, and it was just really not fun. It was a drag, and that gig in Florida, I think, probably stands out.
Yeah.
Nothing against Florida,
no.
but other than, you know, they should probably get their whole voting system together, I think. But that one I remember was, I just wanted it to end. I just wanted the show to end. It's a drag. But, for the most part, you know, most of the gigs I've done, you know, you're there to play for people who bought a ticket. And so the responsibility is to give them their money's worth and
right.
that sort of thing. So, you know, even if there's, you know, some gigs there's more people than others, but that doesn't mean you should give them less.
Right.
You know. So I've always kind of looked at it that way. And once I started playing out live with DC4, it really became evident because we were a new band.
Yeah, starting
from
scratch.
You could say you got this guy from Dio and this guy from Armored Saint, you know, Odin, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't mean that we're any of those bands. So we
right.
had to climb. We had to, you know, and we still do. You know, we keep making records. And, you know, I mean, to be honest, I never really got into it for that sort of thing, you know, for, you know, recognition or fame or I mean, it sounds cliche, you know, but I never really did. I just really enjoy playing music. It's what I do, and I love it. And regardless of anything, you know, if I'd never made a record or anything, I'd probably be still playing guitar. It's, you know, it's nothing like it. Just having the ability is in and of itself is amazing. You know, I'm like, wow, it's so cool that I know how to do this.
Right.
You know? So everything else above and beyond that is gravy, and I'm more fortunate that I've been able to be a part of it at all as far as playing in other countries and other states and recording albums. It's like, wow, that's just super, you know?
Well, Jeff, it's been great talking to you. Thank you for giving us some of your time, and hope everything goes well with DC4 and with Armored
man.
Saint. And
got to recommend everybody go check out DC4. It is really, really good stuff. Do we mention Jeff sings? It's awesome stuff.
Somebody had to do it.
Really good vocals. You should have been singing for Odin back then.
I didn't even know I could do it until, you know, 1995 probably.
Bill Gazzari didn't think you were pretty enough.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, I was too busy wanting to be Eddie Van Halen back then.
Right.
Not a bad thing to aspire to.
Nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on with us, Jeff, and good luck with all the future projects.
Yeah, well, you know, thanks for the support, guys. It's been great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
All right, well, I want to thank Jeff Duncan again for coming on. That was pretty entertaining. What do you think about that?
Very cool, man. How many times do you get to talk to a guy who's been in, you know, three kind of high-profile bands? You know, Odin, you know, they've got
infamous.
Yeah, they're infamous for the decline of Western Civilization, Part Two, the Metal Years. And, you know, it's just one of them things, you know, and watching that movie. And I recommend, if you're a hard rock and heavy metal fan, you've got to see that. I mean, you've just got to.
It's required viewing.
You know, and it's funny, especially now, it's especially cool to look back in retrospect and see, you know, reality TV before reality TV.
Yeah. Well, it's not necessarily what I would show people that are not rock and metal fans, because it's more like our dirty little secret that we love to watch.
Right. I mean, there is some embarrassing stuff in there, and you can tell a lot of the stuff in it is staged. You know, it's all for performance, you know, effect. But it is what it is. And, you know, a lot of people blame that movie for the downfall of hard rock music from the 80s.
I blame Pretty Boy Floyd and bands like that.
Right. But then if you're going to talk about that, you almost have to include bands like, you know, all the other ones that were coming up in L.A. at that time, you know. And I don't want to say Odin, because I think there's a couple of bands out there that didn't get signed that were the exception. Maybe Odin, London. Well, Shark Island, maybe.
Shark Island was awesome. Yeah, there was just a lot. There was a glut of hardworking bands, and not everyone's going to get up to the top.
That's the tough part about it, because, you know, you look at the pool of talent in Los Angeles at that time for that kind of music, you know, the glam hard rock scene. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many bands. Only so many are going to make it.
Right. There's only so much room.
You know, when there's that much of a talent pool, somebody's going to get left behind.
But, you know, then Jeff goes on and, you know, joins Armored Saint, which is an amazing band.
Talk about a guy who, you know, can take it and transition one thing into another thing, into another thing. And with Jeff Duncan, everything rocks. And one thing I want to tell the listeners about, you want a real piece of Jeff Duncan, go on to YouTube and check out, I think it's like the NAMM, I think it's 2011. He's on there with Crank Amplifiers. So put in Jeff Duncan, Crank, and NAMM.
Yeah.
And you're going to come upon this video of him just killing it on guitar.
Yeah, the dude rips on the guitar.
Just tore it up. Beautiful stuff.
So I guess we got to do plugs before we do a playout song. Of course, we're going to do a DC4 track.
Yeah, we got to play a full DC4 track to rock this one out for sure. What else we got to do?
Well, just regular plugs, facebook.com/DecibelGeek, Twitter @DecibelGeekPod. And the website, as long as everything, fingers crossed, went well, by now it should work totally, should be able to go to just decibelgeek.com.
Wait a minute. Let me do it. I can handle it now.
Okay, what's the web address, Aaron?
The web address is now www.decibelgeek.com. Huh?
No, it's .net. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, man. Yeah, mess. No, it's .com. Decibelgeek.com. They dumbed it down for me. Thank you. Thank you.
Playing out today's show, Jeff Duncan with the DC4. This is a track called Triple X. We'll see you next
Crank
week.
Crank this up.
Remember to check us out at dbgeekshow.blogspot.com, facebook.com/decibelgeek, and Twitter @decibelgeekpod. Also available for free on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just amazing, naughty, nasty words.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.